in that the community support that a station has is really the most significant aspect of this. And if you're closed down by the FCC, the thing to do is to spring up under another name with another transmitter. And this would happen, for instance, in Hispanic communities. If, in fact, they would not even go after Hispanic communities out of fear this would happen, or it happened to Napoleon in Decatur, Illinois. But I'm jumping the gun here. What did you guys? What considerations came up in this meeting?
Well, I'm answering that question by saying all of the above. There are, of course, people interested in reforming under new circumstances. There are, of course, people interested, as many of our crew is, in direct action and civil disobedience. There are people doing a lot of outreach, and people doing, trying to assist the media in understanding what just took place and the virtues of micropower. So we have all of the above. We're still sort of fielding a lot of ideas. There was a very energetic crowd, a lot of brainstorming going on about how we should proceed.
How long did the meeting last?
It was actually about 3 hours long.
How many people would you say were there?
I would estimate about 40.
How many police agents? Who knows?
Yes, that question was asked. But as per usual, all of our meetings are open, mm-hmm. and we operate openly, and hopefully you don't waste a whole lot of time wondering about all of the agents' presence, because we have always been above ground.
Now, give the police agents all the work to do. That's the best way to proceed, I think.
Yeah, that's right. So it was a kind of a good-spirited meeting. It seems like people certainly appreciate the loss that it is for the programmers in particular are feeling the loss of the opportunity to do the programs that they've been doing. So I'm actually feeling myself energetic, because I think we've been very successful in educating certainly a very large subset of people in the city of Berkeley and more generally throughout the nation and the world about what micropower can do.
In our last conversation, you indeed said that you had apparently successfully educated the Berkeley city agencies into granting you a waiver for what, for a use permit?
That's right. It was a remarkable and landmark victory to get the local city of Berkeley zoning adjustment board to grant us a use permit for our micropower project.
Now you have a use permit, but you've been enjoined from using it.
A use permit that, only covered a very few days, and then we were enjoined. I think it was officially stamped the week before the injunction. I'll have to go check, but it is kind of ironic that we had this municipal legitimacy for such a short period of time before the injunction landed on us, and now we're in a more problematic circumstance.
Well, what was the reading on the injunction? I mean, I had a long interview today with Larry Hildes, one of the attorneys involved,
mm-hmm.
and I also spoke with attorney David Beauvais, who's been kind of keeping a weather eye on some of this stuff, although perhaps not as closely as Larry Hildes. And I guess the general impression was that the decision made on the basis of the fact that there was no formal application process in the hopes of a waiver was not something that Claudia Wilkins suddenly drew out of her hat necessarily because of political pressure, but the issue had not previously been raised in that form. It seemed rather strange to me that issue had not been raised. If there's a formal process of application might be necessary to have standing, unless you can really show there is absolutely no possibility that a license will be granted. What's your reading on that?
We believe we showed. We believe that, yes, the FCC has made it very clear with its attacks on micropower that it was not about to grant a license or any kind of waiver. I think Claudia Wilkin is being a little disingenuous by suggesting to us that we apply for a license, but that is indeed what she did. Now, that the virtue of this from her position is that she got a chance to completely sidestep the constitutional issues and issue a ruling that would be very hard to overturn. Since, of course, from her perspective, I guess it's hard to argue that you didn't get a license if you didn't apply for one. On the other hand, if they never grant a license to micropower stations, it is futile to spend years hoping, praying, and spending lots and lots of money on the engineer's report and the application fee and so forth. So it's a very, what I love is that it's worthwhile issue to talk about, to educate people about, and to think about, and we should put it on the map. Right now, people are wondering exactly that. What would happen if Free Radio Berkeley applied for a license? And that's certainly one of the dozens and dozens of ideas that we brainstormed.
Doesn't that cost you some $3,000 to $5,000 to apply for?
But Philip did an application for the use permit, and let's see, it was over $1,000, and I got all the fees waived by an extremely sympathetic city council.
You could have a similar sympathetic FCC.
If we want to, one of the many things we could do that would be more like direct action than an actual application would just be to get half the world, since we have half the world sympathizing with us, to apply together a popular application for a license for Free Radio Berkeley, a renowned station, a flagship station for the micropower movement, and ask that the fees all be waived, and ask that the engineering report be waived, and or that we, be permitted to do our own and get some kind of in-kind donation. There are all kinds of possibilities. I know some people are really depressed by this decision, and I can't figure out why, because I think that we have accomplished an extraordinary amount, and right now everybody is focused on exactly the issue we want people to think about. So I'm actually feeling kind of pleased.
So, was there a decision reached by the Free Radio Berkeley staff, community supporters, and media onlookers?
A few too many, I guess. Too many, really, to manifest in one day. I guess there's an effort to create a kind of a steering committee and sort of shore up simple things like communicative opportunities. And there's nothing really that is more than just general that I can tell you. What's most concrete is that there's enormous support for us as a project, and everybody is still scrambling to learn what the facts are and figure out what is the most appropriate course.
Are you going back on the air?
We're currently off the air and taking a look at our options with respect to resuming a transmission in some form.
You're still off the air, and at the moment there are no immediate
off
plans?
The air.
So at the moment there's no immediate plans to go back on the air?
Right now we're off the air, yeah.
Okay.
Many things that's been suggested is that we at least simulate Free Radio Berkeley in the form it's been by broadcasting over the internet so that people can at least see what has been enjoyed. But, of course, there are other various interests, people interested in independent projects.
Now, are there other radio stations in Berkeley and Oakland that are still on the air that are micropower stations?
I'm not aware of, I'm not sure about that. And I know of a couple of stations that have come off the air so that they have the same chance that we're taking to evaluate the change.
Even though they haven't been enjoined.
But yet, no one else is enjoined. We're the only ones who are enjoined.
What other stations have gone off the air, as far as you know?
I'm sorry?
Have other stations gone off the air, as far as you know? Subsequent to the Wilkins decision?
As far as I know, I can only think of... I only know the status of one, and I know San Francisco Liberation Radio is also taking a breather, taking a look at this.
So San Francisco Liberation Radio is also off the air?
I think so, yeah.
Now, let me turn from that subject. I'm glad to see you so cheery. I must say, I wish I felt... And you're listening to Bathrob Spear's Broadsides on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, the June 21st, 1998 edition. I'm your host, Bathrob Spear, Robert Norse, and it's just about noon coming down the pike. Carol's got more to say. She's a Berkeley activist, folk singer. She's going to talk about other issues in Berkeley. This kind of concludes the Free Radio report, however, that she was giving us. Really important as far as I'm concerned. I'm encouraging members of the collective to consider an emergency meeting to really discuss what needs to be discussed soon regarding the station's future, given the current legal situation. Not that the legal situation should be the determining factor, not at all. It has to be, however, certainly has to be one consideration among many. Well, let's continue
and jump from Free Radio Berkeley to other circumstances in Berkeley that affect poor people. Carol Denny talks about that, and then she's followed by activist Keith McHenry talking about San Francisco and new assaults on the poor there.
But I'm glad you're cheering. You also mentioned some plans for some water sports up on Telegraph. Now, what's that all about?
Oh, yes. Well, Telegraph Avenue is the main strip over on the south side of the UC Berkeley campus. And, of course, it's a wild and wonderful place where a lot of people like to congregate and gather just to have fun. And sort of drives the merchants crazy. There are a couple of merchants in particular, Pat Romani, who owns the co-owner of Blake's, and also Andy Ross, the owner now of what was once Fred Cody's bookstore. It's called Cody's. And these two got together and powwowed with the cops last week, and unbeknownst to the city council, a crackdown began, which was highly publicized in the press, but actually not manifest as of Monday. I know because Keith McHenry and I went up there and sat on the sidewalk like a couple of bums, and it was the most peaceful Monday morning I've seen in quite a while.
Hmm.
And apparently things heated up throughout the week, so that Thursday they had ORCA, which is our big police bus up there, and lots overkill of cop habitation. And also, the Cody's employees have been hosing down the sidewalks repeatedly throughout the day in order to hose away those congregants and happy people sitting in the sun, which they hate for a variety of bizarre reasons. So what we decided we'd do tomorrow is bring up, I have a little it's a swimming pool, actually.
A ducky pool.
And I have three masks and snorkel affairs in these little inner tubes. And one's a duck and one's a frog. And we thought we'd bring up, I have this little lobster, plastic lobster toy and a little penguin, and go up and have the Cody's unexpected shower and water sports program and just wait for them to wash us away.
It could be fun. It could really be fun. Are you going to be wearing a revealing bathing suit?
Of course, I'll be wearing an extremely revealing bathing suit. This being a nod to the new notice on nudity. Yeah, they're having a hard time with nudity.
So you're going to invite the explicit players to engage in a little splash?
I should. I got to look for their phone number, because it'd be wonderful to have some naked people cavorting in our instant sea.
This is shocking.
Yes, shocking.
Now, in essence, this is sort of another chapter in the saga described, I guess referred to, and you may have referred to it in Pepper Spray Times, also been referred to in the Berkeley Bark and elsewhere, of police perhaps disquieted that they can't really use Proposition O, the anti-homeless law from 1994, to disperse sitters near buildings. Now they're using what, alleged trespass laws, or is it leaning, being a piece of furniture in human shape? What is the latest on this?
I haven't gotten a word yet about actual arrest or detainment, and I'm interested in that very, very much. What I'm told is that behind the scenes, there's a petition being gathered to reinstate some kind of, or create some kind of anti-sitting ordinance, but they're trying it again.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll let you know when I find out more about this. I certainly know who the participants are. It's the same group of merchants and vendors who are, they're pretty much sick of the younger generation that's up there. There's teenagers and 20-year-olds that hang around together and take each other's skateboard tricks, and I don't know, there's a lot of merchants hanging out. And it's the crowd that they don't want. They want a more gentrified crowd, which is the story I'm sure the people of Santa Cruz know well. So that same group is now collecting these signatures and, like smart people do, pressuring the city council legislative election to get out of action on getting rid of the wrong crowd so that they can pull in more of the right crowd.
Mm-hmm.
Their theory being, of course, that they will do much better business if they get rid of these kids who are up there.
I also understand that you had a kind of a joust at city council over the issue of the Ashkenaz.
Yeah, the Ashkenaz is kind of disoriented about this. The club, as you know, was reconstituted by a group of people that's a combination. There are some people who were...
June 20th, 1998, And we're talking to Carol Denny, continuing our incredibly enlightening conversation. So, Carol, you were apparently at the Ashkenaz, kind of, what do you call it, cultural nightclub?
What do they call themselves now? The Community Cultural and Dance Center?
It's a place where you in the past have played on stage political and folk music, as well as had other people in the community. And in the last couple of years...
I played there for 12 years, and one of them came rushing over to me and said, "You lied! You haven't played it for 12 years. You've played there since 1980. And I thought it was funny, because it's a good example of how they're sort of arbitrarily hostile to me.
So it was 18 years, eh?
It was a long, long time, is all I knew. And yeah, I was off by six to my own disadvantage. What happened, for your listeners' sake, is I knew David McDowell, the previous owner, for many, many years. We were folk dancers together before I was much of a musician anyway, and then, of course, played many benefits down there. We were sued in a slap suit together for both speaking out on behalf of Stevens Park and homeless and open space issues that are reflected by politics surrounding the park. And David was shot to death about 2 years ago. And so that it's been a horrible problem for those of us who loved him and knew him, and certainly for me who worked with him for years. And the club reconstituted, but at the moment of his death, he and I were having an argument. So a lot of people decided that it was a good idea to carry on his blacklist against me, which is actually hadn't been very old at the time of his death. It was a couple of years old at that point. He had decided that I wasn't allowed in the club. It was just a little funny that way. Sometimes he actually had blacklisted quite a few people over the years, and usually got over it in time. So the story is that when they reconstituted the club, they decided that they would keep the blacklist as some kind of show of loyalty to David, which has been, well, a little peculiar to those of us who really think we should all, well, work together in cooperation for the efficacy of that, of course. Anyhow, they also decided that they wanted to ask for public funds this year, not realizing that when that problem was floated last year, it was determined that no, as long as they had a blacklist, they could not avail themselves of public money. So what's happened is, yes, they will be getting some public money with the condition that they drop their blacklist, that they enter mediation with me, that they guarantee that mediation will be the course of the future rather than blacklisting, vendetta, and scapegoating. And all of these conditions have been written out and will be attached to the grant or loan. So that's what's going on. They don't even realize it yet. They're so interested. They've been mousing me in the press and all this stuff. And you just shouldn't take it seriously. I try not to take it personally, although it's no fun. But what everybody should know is that the product of a slap suit is division. And the best way to fight a slap suit is solidarity.
Mm-hmm. And I understand that that your attorney, David Beauvais, may soon be applying for a dissolution of the original injunction that kept you from going to People's Park. I guess that was the slap suit, right? Like I sometimes confuse that with the defamation suit and so forth.
Uh-huh.
But the slap suit was, in fact, the court order that the University of California Regents got, which sought to enjoin you from exercising First Amendment rights in the block right off of Telegraph, just above, I guess it's on Haste, bounded by Haste and Bancroft, not Bancroft.
That's a pretty good description of what was written down, that of course I would always step in and remind people that what a slap suit's really about is exacerbating existing divisions and throwing a few more, because what we had up there in People's Park was a very lively, very creative grassroots movement, and four of us were selected to be leaders of that movement, and which we always found a little bit funny because some of us had never met each other at the point at which we were supposed to be a conspiracy. And so what they do when they sue you in civil court is essentially visit upon your life, and certainly upon your movement, a huge legal and financial boost that for some is insurmountable. They frighten a lot of people that way. Everybody's just worried about, being sued.
And we
certainly learned from the inside out what that's like.
Well, you, Michael Lee, I guess, and it was and two who are no longer with us, David Nadell
and Bob Sparks.
And Bob Sparks. How has this slap suit affected, let's say, in the last couple of years in terms of how you feel at People's Park, at your willingness? I know that for a long time you and other members of the community were really concerned about the blatant refusal of the university to acknowledge real community input, in the park. Its attempt to sweep homeless and poor people from the park, to essentially gentrify the whole area, to destroy a historic creek and other aspects of the environment that have been essentially declared protected by the community. You protested that. What's that?
You know your stuff.
Well, I wish I did. I'm sort of floundering around here. But I'm wondering about the last year or so. Has this, do you think, deterred you from going to the park, from raising the issues?
Oh, no, not at all. Actually, after the injunction was issued, and I used to go up there and violate it all the time, mostly because we had great solidarity in the park, and I knew that there would be people at least to witness on my behalf and so forth. It was the absence of the solidarity, which was not the consequence of the lawsuit, except over time, people continued to create more and more division rather than recognize the necessity of working together. And that's still a problem in the park. And I don't say that out of any effort to embarrass anyone. I'm just saying that if other communities, for instance, in your community, if...
And you've been listening to Carol Denny, Berkeley activist, talking about conditions for poor people in Berkeley, California, particularly around Telegraph Avenue's People's Park, and the injunction that was affecting her and is still affecting her and others who organized protests in the park against human rights violations. But speaking of human rights violations, we have with us here, calling in from San Jose, Trouble Tracker Ann Turner, as I call her. She doesn't call herself that, but that's what I call her. Ann is a point person for the California Homeless Civil Rights Action Network and involved with a number of organizations, including the Community Homeless Alliance Ministry and Food Not Bombs in San Jose. And I'd earlier spoken to you all about the demonstration, meeting, speak out happening between 5 and 6, actually starting sometime between 5 and 6 and going on after that, in San Jose at the First Christian Church at 80 South 5th Street today, when the Kensington Welfare Rights Union will pull into town on their bus on a 25-stop tour. We got a person on the line in our rather difficult-to-handle telephone line. I hope that works. And she can give us more information. Here's Ann Turner.
Hi, Ann.
Hi, how are we doing today?
Not bad. Yourself?
Oh, doing okay. Just getting ready for the big human rights tribunal that we're having today.
Tell us about that.
The Kensington Welfare Rights Union is from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and they're the ones that did the tent city, and they still have a tent city that they have to move every so often. The tent city is set up like a community, and they have doctors, a tent for doctors, and everything else.
This is in Philadelphia?
Excuse me?
This is in Philadelphia?
Yeah, that's Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
And last year they walked from Philadelphia to the UN in New York. And on their way there, they stopped on the side of the road, set up tents, and, you know, rested and all that kind of stuff. They walked to the UN to find out why United Nations was continually letting the United States violate people's civil rights here in the United States. And
what specific violations were they concerned about?
Well, we're concerned about all violations. It could be child care, medical conditions, not getting the doctors and things. It could be not having enough food to feed your family, no shelter, loss of a job, loss of utilities. One young man that's going to speak today that's 17 years old had tried to organize a union at his place of work, and he got fired. That's a violation because we should be able to organize.
Uh-huh.
So violations are widespread. It could be, you know, whatever you think that a violation that the United States hasn't lived up to.
Well, you say they marched last year to the UN. What did the UN say when they arrived?
The UN didn't have anything to say. You know, what can they say? So that's the reason why they're doing this year. They're going to 33 cities in the United States, the poorest communities. What they're going to do is collect violations. They're going to, well, they're in San Francisco right now collecting their violations and speaking. And then tonight they'll be here.
Well, there are plenty of violations in San Francisco. I know that Mayor Brown continues to enforce in highly intensified form the Don't Let Them Sleep at Night Matrix program that former Mayor and Police Chief Jordan was pushing. So I guess they're getting a lot of information there. What kind of stuff are you think they're going to find in San Jose? Well, are you going to present any testimony?
I'm going to present testimony on health care because I believe that we need universal health care. I'm on oxygen between 15 to 17 hours a day. And because my husband got laid off in March, we have no health care now. So that means Food Not Bombs and a few other my angels, I call them, got out there and got me a breathing concentrator so that we don't have to pay $200 a month for it. I can't go to the doctors because it costs $115 every time I go to get a shot or something. So that's, right now, that's my biggest concern is health care.
Now, is this a change from, let's say, a year or two ago? I mean, you're a poor person, right? I mean, isn't there some sort of Medicare or Medicaid that covers you?
Okay, yeah, I'm a homeless person, mother, disabled with two sons. Before we had medical care, they didn't pay everything, but they paid for me to go and get a Demerol shot or for the breathing machine or something. I'm sorry, I lost my concentration there for a minute.
It's okay. You were talking about, I was talking about the change from prior to the cutbacks and how they've affected you.
Oh, okay. Because of the changes in the welfare laws and SSI, August 22nd, 1996, when President Clinton signed the welfare reform bill, it has changed a lot of things that people can't get those kind of benefits anymore. So that I'm having a very hard problem. I've been trying for 3 years to get SSI. They've changed the rules, so now we have to really dig and things that were covered before aren't covered now. So there's a big hassle with that.
And you're literally on a machine 15 hours a day.
Right, right.
Well, what is the medical condition you have?
I have a tumor on my brain. I've had 3 brain surgeries. That's how we became homeless. And there's no good outlook for me. They said that eventually that I would just stop breathing. And that's the reason why I'm on the breathing machine now.
So right now you're making every breath count, huh?
Right, right. But I still get out there and I give everybody hell.
You sure do.
Because I think we all should start rallying around each other and quit blaming each other. It's not, the government likes to blame different groups. They're blaming immigrants for this or welfare recipients for that or, you know, whatever. I think it's time now, and that's what this is called, the time is now. The time is now to start rallying around each other, holding hands, and telling our government that the violations, the killing, because I've known 3 people personally since 96 that committed suicide because their benefits and things were cut off and they didn't know what to do. So now is the time. If we don't start taking back our government now and telling our government that these violations are not going to continue, that people should have enough food, people should have enough shelter, things are going to get worse. So we need to start rallying and get around each other right now.
Will you be at the Kensington Welfare Rights Union meeting with the Food Not Bombs and for the Universal Declaration of Human Rights Community Tribunal at the First Christian Church at between 5 and 6 and thereafter today?
Yeah, I'll be there today because I'm going to get testimony on universal health care.
And are you inviting our audience to come on down?
Yes, I am. We need everyone. We need to fill the church up. We need to fill the street up. We need to show that we've invited legislation from Sacramento. We've invited city council. We've invited, all the key players in our government, and everybody but 2 declined.
Who were the 2 who didn't?
The 2 that didn't was Bob Sillen and also Yolanda from DDS, Department of Health Services.
So there are going to be at least 2 government people at this meeting, huh?
Right, right. What we're having is it's called a listen panel. And all we want them to do is listen to the different violations that's occurring. even though they know what's happening. We want them to listen to what the violations are, and then what they think that they'll have a few minutes to speak afterwards, what they think they can do to help us to stop these violations.
That's interesting. I just came from San Diego, where we went to the 15th floor of the Wells Fargo building to give the Federal Equal Employment Opportunities Commission complaints that homeless people were not being allowed to apply, much less be accepted for even low-level jobs like McDonald's minimum wage service jobs.
Oh my God.
So it's not just the cutoff of services. I mean, this is another example of blatant discrimination and the war on the poor.
Right.
And I guess I'll hope to bring along, assuming my car makes it, some testimony. And again, I invite the audience, if anyone wants to come on to this this event happening today, to...
So everybody needs to come.
You can either go there directly, and that's at 80 South 5th Street in downtown San Jose.
And that way we can welcome the Kensington Welfare Rights, because they're doing a job that I commend them for. They're alerting the United States that we know what our violations are now, and that we're not going to take it anymore.
Or you can, if you want, give me a call here in Santa Cruz at 423-HUFF. We'll probably drive by the town clock probably around 4:30, but we don't have too much space in the car, maybe for one or two people. So if anybody has another car that wants to come along, might be good.
Well, we've got people all the way from Merced that's coming.
Wow.
To talk about their violations.
Well, I also heard from Food Not Bombs activist Lennox that there's going to be a Music in the Parks event next Thursday.
Right, the 25th.
On the 25th of June. This is kind of a gentrified, hoity-toity event that is specifically being put into a park frequented by a number of homeless people that the police have on occasion been trying to drive out, namely
right.
It's out of St. James Park.
Right. Yeah, St. James Park, right there in the middle of town. last Saturday, the police came, and I don't know, it was probably about three or four. We've had different interpretations of what happened that day. And they came and they took their billy clubs in one hand and hit the other hand, and they went around until they could find people that they could arrest, and then they start arresting those people.
How many did they arrest?
I've heard about four or five.
And was that when Food Not Bombs was feeding? I think they feed every Saturday afternoon, right?
Right. No, this was around 11:30 before Food Not Bombs got there.
Mm-hmm.
And to let people know that Food Not Bombs does need people's help, we had college students, and they just graduated, so now they're leaving and going back home, so we need help as far as cooking and serving, and unfortunately, Saturday when this happened, Food Not Bombs was not able to serve because there was only one person that was there to cook, and so we need help. But we've got, we're on tape where the police have come to St. James Park and harassed Food Not Bombs and also the people that are visiting the park. The Downtown Association wants to take the park back
park. You mean to exclude homeless and poor people from the park?
Right, right. They said that, you know, visitors and tourists won't come to San Jose if they see a bunch of raggedy homeless people down there. Well, I haven't seen any raggedy homeless people. I've seen some business people that were raggedy. But they're calling this Music in the Other Park, which was taken by, I don't know if you know...
Cesar Chavez Plaza?
Oh, gosh. Mama Faye?
We actually talked about Mama Faye a couple of weeks ago. She was the kind of... She was the rather feisty, outspoken, but...
Yeah, she's in jail right now.
community leader who was taken... Initially, we thought she was put into a psych ward.
Yeah.
But what's happened to her?
Well, she is the one that started the name Music in the Other Park. And it really is funny how she got incarcerated just before they took the name of Music in the Other Park. And... you know, they're doing it now. They're going to have bands and stuff. And what Food Not Bombs wants to do is have a picture exhibit, photo exhibit, of
kind of like the Universal Declaration of Human Rights violations.
Right, right. And then we want to go around and talk to people and not come out and say, you know, we're homeless at first, but we want to talk to people and find out their stereotyping, what they think, you know, homeless people are, who they are, what do they do, things like this. You know, engage them in conversation, and then at some point down the line, say, well, you know, your stereotype has just been busted because I'm homeless. Do I fit that stereotype?
Mm-hmm.
Because people are afraid, and if they confront their fear and see that, you know, homeless people are the working poor, we're not monsters, maybe we can start working with them and, you know, getting some of this harassment down, because it's really bad here in San Jose.
So, this is next Thursday. What time does the event start?
It's from 5 to 8.
5 in the afternoon to 8 in the evening. I guess this is at St. James Park, which is, between St. John and St. James Street and 1st and 2nd Streets in downtown San Jose. Yeah. Is there a number people can call for more information about this?
Yeah, they can call 236-2115.
236-2115.
Right.
To get more information about, what are you calling your event, Music in the Other Park? Or?
That's what they're calling it. Music in the Other Park.
Mm-hmm. You can also, of course, come today to the First Christian Church in San Jose and contact the Kensington Welfare Rights Union as they come through town on their bus and collect information on human rights violations. Again, the address to go to in San Jose is 80 South 5th Street at the First Christian Church, which is often where the Community Homeless Alliance Ministry meets. Anything happening with them?
Yeah, all this week they've been visiting City Council and stuff, because Thursday, City Council, on Tuesdays is City Council, and then on Thursdays they're the Redevelopment Agency. And Redevelopment had come into some money, and the Community Homeless Alliance wanted them to put $52 million extra dollars so that we can start building here in San Jose. The median here in San Jose is $1,400 for a two-bedroom apartment. So they all week visited the City Council, talked to them. So Thursday we went down there to voice as a demonstration. When there was ministers that talked and activists from the community that talked, and also Kathy Napoli, we wanted her to become mayor, because she is very supportive of the homeless community here in San Jose. She stands up and speaks for us. She stood up there and was given testimony on the conditions that people have to live by here in San Jose. And when she was talking, Susan Mayer Hammer stood up, walked away, paid no attention to the woman, no attention to Kathy. Kathy said, okay, Mayor Susan Hammer, I'll just wait until you come back. And Hammer says, oh, I can hear you. I mean, she was very, Hammer was very disgraceful to people.
Disrespectful?
Yes. I mean, she wasn't listening.
None of these mayors do. I just came from Santa Monica and San Diego, where the San Diego mayor, also a woman, cut off the speakers without letting them talk. I think she let two people talk, well, maybe it was 1 to 2 minutes each on homeless issues.
Well, ours was only a minute.
And Santa Monica, you know, they've literally shut down the meeting rather than listen to Jennifer Wagoner speak there. So and of course here in Santa Cruz, the ability of, the tendency of Councilmember Mike Rotkin to threaten to have me arrested is legendary. He does it repeatedly. If I go 10 seconds over my the 3-minute cap, and then of course he and his council members make long speeches denouncing me and so forth.
And they talk to each other?
Oh, of course, they talk to each other. Let me ask you, I don't know if I have too much more to ask you, because...
Well, let me finish about the City Council thing.
Mm-hmm.
Scott Wagers is the head of Community Homeless Alliance. And when he went up to, when they called his name to go up and speak, what we did is, as in solidarity, all the activists the homeless and whoever else was with us, we all went up there and stood in line in front of the podium to show that we had solidarity against this issue. And that's what she was doing. She was cutting people off. She said, "Your 1 minute is over." And what they did is they kept talking until what they had to say was over.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm saying with the civil rights today. That's the reason why today is a starting point. Today is very important that we start rallying against. We start rallying together, and we start getting out of our little corners. And because all of our issues are important. All of them are civil rights violations. And one voice, as if we get together and speak as one voice, that speaks louder than if we have 10 different groups speaking.
And so what Reverend Scott Wager spoke for, what, 1 minute and he was cut off?
Yeah, he spoke for one, well, everybody did. They spoke for 1 minute, and then Hammer says, "Oh, your time's over with," but they kept speaking.
And what was the response to that?
She just kept hollering, "It's over, it's over, your time is over." And he blatantly told her that we were there to do civil disobedience, and that if they wanted to arrest us, feel free to do it. That's the reason why we went. We were looking to be arrested.
Well, I know that that Scott Wagers and the Community Homeless Alliance Ministry successfully sheltered some folks this winter, but then the shelter space was, what, closed down in May, and then they got motel vouchers for a month, and what's happened since then?
Okay, they're in the they're back in the church until July 14th. Tuesday, I think it was Tuesday or Wednesday.
How many families is this? How many people are being sheltered?
Right now there's 47 people that's been sheltered.
And I guess there was a big brouhaha about this last winter because the same people who want to make sure the homeless don't come to St. James Park on Thursday are also trying to make sure the homeless don't get shelter in this church, which is, what, 4 or 5 blocks from St. James Park,
right,
where today the Kensington Human Welfare Rights Union is meeting with everybody.
Right. That's why we picked the church, because to us it's a symbolic place where this everything is happening. They were hollering that over the winter that the church wasn't zoned for sleeping, whatever that means.
It's interesting. I just got back from this trip, as I said, where we talked to Reverend Wiley Drake down in Buena Park, California, which is sort of southern Los Angeles, and they attempted to tell him the same thing, that he had actually convicted him of 4 misdemeanors for housing homeless people in his church, but he continued and continues to house 52 homeless people, regardless of what the city authorities said, and the city has been forced to back down.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
See, that's what happened in San Jose. They got forced to back down because what they did is they worked with Scott, and we got a shelter over Montgomery Street, but it closed after 3 months. It closed...
You wouldn't say it closed. You would say they closed it, right?
Right. Yeah, they closed it. And they promised, I mean, every time they've promised the homeless people something, it has never materialized yet. They promised that once they were there in the Montgomery shelter, and as when time came for the shelter to be closed, they would have places to, for people to live. Well, that didn't materialize. Now they're promising 10 houses. That's what they promised this week for August the 1st. That by August 1st, there'll be 10 houses that the Community Alliance can move into. So now we're waiting until August 1st to see if that... If it's true to their nature, there isn't any. There is not 10 houses in San Jose anyway that are empty.
Well, it's interesting the kinds of threats that are used. We also visited San Diego, where there are 150 to 200 people, and we're going to be playing an interview on the air later with some of these folks who have been sleeping in front of San Diego's biggest downtown center since March 15th, and the city constantly threatens to have them arrested and so forth, but then doesn't, because they really have no place to put them and no
right.
place for them to go.
Right.
And indeed in Seattle, there was a similar situation happening in Seattle, Washington, up the coast. A large tent city was set up because the council and the city raised the jungle, which was the term given to the area where homeless people had been sleeping, and they're continuing their tent city in the jungle itself, and that I haven't gotten the latest report from that, but there is really a general refusal on the part of poor and homeless people to just lie down and disappear into the bushes. We can't lie down. It's illegal to lie down.
Yeah, it is.
Hide out somewhere, you know, I don't know. That's
well,
not being done.
Norse, you know, if they sleep under the bridges anymore, we have the police sweep.
Well, you can't even sleep under our bridges because all the bridge areas at night are closed to everybody. After dark, it's illegal to be anywhere near the San Lorenzo River unless you're walking through here in Santa Cruz, thanks to our liberal progressive city council here in Santa Cruz. But let me, is there anything more you want to conclude with? Because I'm kind of got to hustle along with a few more tapes here, Ann.
No. Just that, you know, everybody that can come today. It's very important to meet the Kensington Welfare Rights Union, and if you have testimony, to let people know what your violation is.
Thank you, Ann Turner.
Together.
And I will, I'll be coming over, I presume, and we'll be talking to you later.
Okay, I'll see you there.
All right.
One thing I did want to mention, that if someone isn't familiar with San Jose, that 80 South 5th Street is between San Fernando, where San Jose State University is, and Santa Clara Street. So that's a focal point where the church is.
If anybody has any questions about how to get to 80 South 5th Street, which is where the Kensington Welfare Rights Union is meeting today, starting around 5 or 5:30, give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833.
And also give me a call at 236-2115 to figure out how we can all start uniting. Every city, every state, we need to start uniting now, and we need to start speaking as one voice and not take the violations anymore. We have our children that are dying on the street because they're homeless.
Your number again, Ann?
236-2115.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And you're listening to Ann Turner of the Food Not Bombs San Jose and Community Homeless Alliance Ministry, as well as a number of other groups. And she's going to be, as I said before, at the San Jose